Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 342 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in this podcast, I'm actually going to be talking about something that is extremely high yield. It's not something that will help you on a USMLE exam. It's something that will help you with your ERAS application. In fact, today's topic is common mistakes in ERAS applications. Common mistakes in ERAS applications. And this is especially well suited for IMGs, so international medical graduates, and also just US medical students. And again, before I go in, again, I do want to mention I offer an MBME test taking strategies course. Again, tons of people have taken this course by this point. More than 1,000 people have taken this course. And again, they found it to be extremely helpful with regards to preparing for the USMLE exams. It's primarily for Step 2 CK and for Step 3. And then, if you're taking Step 2 CK or Step 3 anytime soon, I do have a course that's coming up. So the test taking strategies course is on the 4th of October from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And then I have a review course from the Tuesday to Friday of that same week from the 5th to the 8th of October. It will be a comprehensive course and we'll be covering a lot of biostats, ethics, internal medicine, psychiatry, neurology, peds, surgery, OB-GYN, communications, professionalism, ethics, again, healthcare systems, multi-system processes and disorders. Again, we'll be dealing with those things. Again, I've had many people attend these courses and they've done really well. I've had people have 30-point improvements, 40-point improvements. I've had people just have really, really good score improvements. And I've overall, the overwhelming majority of people that I've attended have gotten very good results from it. So if you're interested in any of these courses, shoot me an email and I'll give you some more details on how to register. So let's go right into, again, the common mistakes made in ERAS applications. Again, I have worked through quite a number of cycles with people applying for residency. I've worked with many people that have had red flags on the applications, right? Oh, like I've worked with people that have graduated from medical school like 10 years ago, right? I've worked with people that have transferred schools even in the Caribbean. Just think about that. Just literally think about that. Transferring schools in the Caribbean, right? Going to med school in the Caribbean is not ideal to start, but then transferring to another med school is really not ideal at all, right? I've worked with these people. I've worked with people that have failed USMLE exams, and now these people are all successful residents. And again, I also have experience being on an admissions committee. I was on the admissions committee for a whole year, actually, for one of the top medical schools in the country, in the US. So I believe it's top two or top three these days, one of those two. So I believe I do know what I'm talking about with this process. But again, at the end of the day, I think I should always throw in this disclaimer, your mileage may vary, right? Again, you should trust but verify. Don't believe everything I say. But again, I'm just speaking to you based on my experiences and based on experiences I've and principles that I've used that have really helped people. Again, there's tons of, I've probably lost count at this point of people I've worked with that are now successful residents in many disciplines, dermatology, psychiatry, family medicine, internal medicine, neurosurgery. Just I've worked with people from tons of disciplines, ortho. Like really, there are very few disciplines. I can't really think of a discipline that I've not worked with people trying to go into that discipline, right? Even disciplines that people traditionally, like certain groups, don't traditionally match into, I've worked with people that have matched into those disciplines. So I do have quite a bit of experience in this area. So now, what are some mistakes that people make on these applications? The very first one are just grammatical errors, right? Again, I understand that for some people, English may not be your first language. But the thing is, you literally have no excuse to have a personal statement that is written with grammatical errors. There are so many tools these days that you can use to correct your English, to correct your grammar, to correct your sentence structure, right? So the thing is, when you present an ERAS application that is riddled with errors to a program director, you're essentially showing them that you may have problems with appropriate documentation. Because the thing is, healthcare, especially in the US, is very litigious. You need to be careful with the words you use and how you use those words. So if you're really poor with your English, really poor with your documentation, then you're showing them that this person could potentially become a liability, right? Because they could look at their notes and say, oh, a lawyer can pick apart the literal words that you wrote down that don't really reflect what was going on in that situation. And that can put your residency, that can put your own career in great jeopardy, right? So I will strongly encourage you again, find a service, right, that would edit out grammatical errors from your ERAS application. It's almost always a worthwhile investment for people. And also just sentence structure. You see some people, they're just really poor with sentence structure. Again, I'm not saying you need an English PhD, but like you just need to be better with the way you structure your sentences for your ERAS applications. Now, the second common mistake people make is when they have wall of text experience descriptions. Oh, this one is very common. Again, as a person that, you know, I did tons of ERAS applications with every cycle, right? You see people, they're describing one experience and they have like 10 bullet points, 5 bullet points. That is just terrible, right? The thing is, it's a big no-no. Let me tell you this. When you're writing your experience descriptions for ERAS, you need to compress those things to 1 to 3 sentences. In fact, to be honest with you, I am very glad that internal medicine, surgery, and dermatology with this cycle decided to have these supplemental applications. And they put very strong word limits, 300 words, right? The thing is, if people actually stuck to those word limits in their ERAS applications, then they won't be putting all this fluff that is really not needed. Right? You see some people, they're like, oh, Divine, but I must describe everything. No, you don't. You don't. The thing is, the people that are reviewing your application, they're probably going to be reviewing like 100 or so other applications. Think about it. If the first thing that greets them is a wall of text, wall of text, wall of text, wall of text, then they won't read your application as closely as they need to. So they won't be able to abstract the key pieces of information that you're trying to tell them, right? That's why you need to make your application high yield, right? Don't make a low yield application. Many people make low yield applications, right? So your experience descriptions, keep them to 3 sentences maximum, right? Again, it may seem uncomfortable, but it's the right thing to do, because think about it. If you're a person reviewing a person's application and you're like, wow, this person put like 2 to 3 sentence experience descriptors, right? Oh, I can get a very quick, nice sense of who they are. Then you want to read the application closely and you'll make good high yield notes that you can present before a residency selection committee. Now, the third common mistake that people make, again, these are all things that I've seen. I literally can give a plethora of examples of these kinds of things, right? The third thing, especially with Caribbean Med students, listing all their clinical rotations on the application. This is a huge, mighty, ginormous no-no. No, let me tell you this. The only people that should list clinical rotations on their ERAS application are people that went to a non-US or a non-Caribbean med school. Basically, if you did not do the bulk of your rotations in the US, you did the bulk of your clinical rotations in your home country, then if you have like some US clinical experience, let's say you did like an observership or you did like a clinical rotation, right? Let's say you did like 2 or 3 of them or whatever. Yes, absolutely. You can put those in your ERAS application. But if, let's say you're a Caribbean medical student and you did all your, I mean, this thing I'm saying sounds kind of obvious, but believe it or not, I've seen this play out, right? So the thing is, say for example, you go to a med school in the Caribbean and then you do all your clinical rotations in the US and then you put all of them as work experiences in ERAS, family medicine rotation, internal medicine, psych, neuro, da-da-da-da-da. If you do those things, I'm telling you, I would not be surprised if a residency program director just promptly deletes your ERAS application from their computers or tosses it in the trash, right? Please, 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 if you're a Caribbean med student, do not list your clinic, because all your clinical, like program directors already understand that your clinical rotations were completed in the United States, right? You don't have to rehash your entire, all your clinical rotations back to them. And then the fourth common mistake people make with ERAS applications is padding the applications with useless experiences, right? Useless experiences. So the thing is, you see some people, they attended a health fair for like 2 hours and boom, they throw it in there. They attended this thing where they maybe spoke with like 2 or 3 people for like a few minutes. Boom, they throw it in there. No, here's what you're doing by doing that. You're pretty much watering down your application, right? Like I've seen many people, especially people applying to these competitive specialties, they feel the need to have the longest ERAS applications, right? Like, for example, for me, whenever I see an ERAS application, I'm like, oh, this is like going into the double digits. Like when people send me their PDFs for edits, And I noticed that, oh, this thing is going into the double digits. I just know, like, okay, I'm going to see some bogus experiences here, right? Or I'm going to see a person that took all the experiences and then transformed them to, like, walls of text, right? Don't pad your application with useless experiences. You're pretty much watering down your application. Again, you're making your application lower yield. And then you wonder, I mean, like, you see some people, that's why, like, when you read experiences of people on online forums, you need to take a lot of what they say with a grain of salt. You see people say, oh, I got in the 260s on step one and step two CK, but I noticed that it's really hard for me to get interviews, or I didn't match in a program or whatever. Well, let me tell you, maybe one area you really screwed up was with your application. Again, I have interviewed people personally that had very high scores where their application left much to be desired, right? So don't pad your application with useless experiences. Don't make your application low yield. You can have an ERAS application where if they download the PDF, it's like 6-7 pages, but it captures you as a very high-powered, very respectable individual, right? So again, don't add useless experiences to your application. Just don't, right? That's not a smart thing to do. Now, the fifth common mistake that people make is that they make their ERAS applications based on poor advice. Right? Based on poor advice. Unfortunately, this is something that afflicts many international medical graduates. Right? The thing is, you need to be careful with what you listen to. So that's why you even say, I put the disclaimer at the beginning of this podcast, like, hey, I may be selling you snake oil right now. I mean, I'm not intending to sell you snake oil. I feel like I'm telling you the truth based on my experiences and based on experiences working with many people that have been successful. Right? But again, you need to watch who you listen to. Right? You see some people, they follow like some online guides, some online templates in writing their personal statements. But then you look at these templates and you're like, wow, this thing is pure trash, right? So again, you really need to be careful, right? Or for example, you see some people, they let like this one person that has very limited knowledge, very limited experiences in a certain discipline be the ones giving them advice that they then follow hook, line, and sinker. No. You need to be careful, especially people that, let's say, oh, wow, this person got into residency in like 1991 or something like that, right? I'm not saying that those people don't have a wealth of experience to share, but you got to be careful. Chances are the things that were very amazing for them to match into residency in 1991 may not be the exact same things that are very wonderful and awesome for you matching into residency in 2021. So it's very important, watch who you listen to, watch who you listen to. And one thing that sometimes is really surprising is, sometimes when you're trying to tell people that, no, this thing you're doing is not helping you, they don't think that they know everything, right? Again, the thing is, you need to be really careful. Like, I've seen many people like have just some flat out wrong advice. Like, I'll give you a classic example. There was this person I worked with during an admission cycle, and the person sent me their personal statement, and they were like, oh, this chairman, I think the chairman of like some department, again, I'm going to try to be as vague as possible. The chairman of some department in their hospital said, oh, this personal statement was killer. It was amazing. It was direct and to the point. But then any rational person, I'm telling you this, any rational person that reads that personal statement will be like, what? Like literally as I was reading that personal statement, I had to control myself. I was like, whoa, like what is, like how does this person think that they will match, right? So there's this part of the Bible that says that there is a way that seems right to a man, but in the end is destruction. Like literally, if that person had put that personal statement out in the wild to other residency programs like that, I can almost guarantee that that person would have gotten almost no interview, like no interview or very few interviews. Right. So again, you need to be careful with who you listen to for advice. The thing is, some people have like some very strange, bizarre perspectives on life. Right. And then they transfer those perspectives to like their writing or to their thoughts on what an ERAS application should be. You got to be careful of those people. Again, I've seen many people, I'm telling you, especially international medical graduates. Right. I've seen many people being led astray. So again, be careful of who you take your advice from. Be careful of who you take your advice from. Some people can lead you astray. You got to be careful there. And then the sixth common mistake I see people make in their ERAS applications is going into the very fine details of their research. Basically, you see some people, they look at their ERAS applications as extensions of the manuscript that they are trying to publish. And then they wonder, again, why people are really irked as they read their ERAS applications. Again, you gotta be, the thing is, when you're describing your research, all you're describing is the topic of your research and then the skills that you got from that research experience. Like, oh, did it help you build skills in like problem solving or critical thinking or whatever? That's what you should be focusing on, right? But you see some people, they're like, oh, my research did some experiments with the zinc finger protein in Pseudomonas aeruginosa mouse models. And then we knocked out the KX2539978 ABCDEFGH gene. And then we did PCR on it. And then we took it through like 10 different steps. You see the wall of text they put. No, you're literally destroying your application by doing that. That is precisely the wrong thing to do in describing your research experiences. In fact, this kind of blends into my seventh point, the seventh mistake, right? This is something that many people make in, again, their descriptions of their experiences and also in their personal statements, right? They go into super fine details of their experience with a patient, right? Or a surgical procedure. Right. So you see, for example, like I classically see this in like applicants are like going for like surgical specialties. Right. So you see these people, they write this. They say that, oh, wow, that they were enamored when they saw this procedure. And then they start describing every single step of the procedure. Right. The thing is, in those circumstances, you think you're showing them your knowledge and your commitment to the discipline. Let me tell you what you're actually doing. You're actually annoying the people that are reading your application. Think about it. If, for example, you're applying into neurosurgery, right? Let me tell you this. The people that are reviewing your application, chances are that procedure, that also enamoring procedure for you, is something they've done like 1,000 times, right? The thing is, your personal statement and your ERAS application is to help people get to know who you are and why you are committed to a specialty. Right? Not, oh, I know the technicalities of all the procedures in this specialty. No, it comes across as proud and it comes across as very immature, right? But that's a common mistake that many people make. Like literally, there are applicants I've spoken to where I'm like, no, this thing you're doing with your ERAS application, you're literally leading yourself in the wrong direction. But no, you see some people, they think they know it all. That, oh, you know what? No, I need to describe the fine details of a hip replacement. I need to describe the fine details of this abdominal surgery I saw. Well, I wish you all the best. I literally wish you all the best, right? But again, many your application is, again, to tell them, who are you? Why are you committed to this discipline? You see many people's like personal statements, ERAS applications, they have lots of fluff, but they have no substance. No substance, right? Like literally, let me tell you this. This is a very good litmus test for if your personal statement or your ERAS application is a good one. Ask yourself, if a person reads your personal statement, can they write down like 4 bullet points as single sentences as to why you want to go into a certain discipline? You see some people, they are literally their personal statements, their ERAS applications, they are going on and on and on and on and on and on and on about all these wonderful stories. But again, those wonderful stories have like no substance. Again, I'm literally begging you, like you may notice that I'm speaking quite passionately this morning. I'm speaking passionately because many people get themselves in trouble. They may have like great stats and everything, but then their ERAS application ends up being their own undoing. Again, you gotta be careful with those things, right? You gotta be careful with those things. And then the eighth mistake that people make is separating similar experiences. Again, the thing is, many times people that are reading your application, they've read so many applications, so they are able to sniff out when you're trying to pad your application, right? So you see some people, let's say they did some, they volunteered for a health fair in 2012 I don't want to call out any specific organization. So let's say they did a health fair in 2012 at a Divine Intervention Hospital, right? And then in 2013, they participate in the same health fair or something, even if it may not be like identical, but it may be like very, very related at Divine Intervention Hospital, right? And then they put the one in 2012 as one experience, they describe it. They put the one in 2013 as one experience and they describe it. No, you should not do that. Again, that's the thing. I feel like sometimes the people that fill out these ERAS applications, they think that the people that are reading and reviewing the applications are dumb. Let me tell you this. These people are not dumb. They know exactly what they're doing, right? Again, they were selected as ERAS application reviewers because they have some kind of pedigree in reviewing applications. Again, you need to be careful. They can see right through the fluff, the snake oil you're trying to sell to them. Again, you got to be careful with those things. Now, the ninth common mistake, although I won't call this a mistake, but it's just something to watch out for, is having like large timeline gaps in your application. The thing is, you want people to be able to almost build like a history of who you are based on your ERAS application, right? So let's say, for example, you have like a volunteer experience from 2012, right? And then literally, there's like a 2013 to 2018 gap in your ERAS application. That leaves much to be desired, right? So again, you want people to have a sense of what you've been doing from at least your med school years to the present time, right? Especially, this is especially important for people that have graduated from med school a while back. You want to show them what you have been doing, right? You don't want them thinking that, was this person sitting at home and playing video games? Or was this person not really using their lives productively? No, that is not the impression that you're trying to give, right? And then the 10th mistake that people make is, if, for example, you fail the USMLE exam, like if you failed a USMLE exam or you have a super low score, you need to explain it in your personal statement. You see, some people, they almost think that they can just you failed step one, or gee, you failed step two CK once. And then they just think that they can just not talk about it in their ERAS application. No, you cannot do that. You literally have to talk about that in your personal statement. You need to have a paragraph that is devoted to explaining what happened, why you think it happened, you taking responsibility, how you remedied the situation, and then how you've moved forward from it, and what you learned from that experience, right? You need to explain. If you have a fail on the USMLE, or let's say you have a really low score, let's say you have like a 199 on any of the USMLE exams, right? Like step one, for example. I mean, if you get a 199 on step two, that's a fail, right? But let's say on step one, you get like a 199. You absolutely need to explain that in your ERAS application. And then as we draw to a close, the 11th mistake is not applying on the dates due, right? I see this question many times on online, on Reddit, on SDN, or whatever. You see people, they're like, people have even asked me this one-on-one, like, Divine, like, my scores are coming out in October. Should I wait till then before I apply? Or, Divine, should I wait until all my recommendation letters have been uploaded before I apply? No, you should not wait. You absolutely should not wait. Like, I'm telling you this, if you don't submit your ERAS application on the first day that residency programs are able to download applications, you are placing yourself at a significant disadvantage with regards to getting interviews or getting matched. Again, when people start adding programs later, right? You need to, let me tell you this. If a program sees you adding them later, right? Adding them later, then the thought is, this person did not really want us from the beginning, right? They didn't really want us from the beginning, but they're adding us now because they're beginning to run out of options. So I'm telling you this, if you have a score that has not come in, or you have a recommendation letter that has not come in, that does not mean you should not submit your application. On September 29th, you should submit your application. In fact, I tell people this, many of the students I work with, I tell them that you should try, your goal should be to submit your application at least one day before the deadline. Because sometimes ERAS has like technical glitches and stuff that then makes submitting your application a challenging endeavor, right? So again, submit your application by the due date. That's very, very important, right? Now, the 12th mistake that people make is not being realistic, right? So the thing is, you see some people, they have like a 210 on step one and a 217 on step two. And then they are going all in on applying into like orthopedic surgery. Let me tell you this, you're setting yourself up for failure. Now, let me say this, Do I mean that by having a 210 on step 1 and a 217 on step 2, you cannot march into orthopedic surgery? You absolutely can. You definitely can. In fact, I'm telling you this. I've worked with people, again, for privacy reasons, because, again, I always maintain privacy with people I work with. But I have worked with people that have had low scores that have matched into good programs, that have matched into competitive disciplines, right? So it is absolutely possible. But you need to be realistic. You need to be realistic, right? If you have low scores, if you know your scores are like not competitive at all for the specialty you're trying to apply into, I will encourage you to have some kind of backup. Have some kind of backup, right? Again, the thing is, the more cycles you go through, the smaller your chances of matching, right? It's better for you to have a job that you can tolerate and used to provide for your family than no job whatsoever. Again, don't get me wrong. I know some people listening to this may be like, wow, so is medicine all about the money? No. Medicine is not all about the money. It is not. Medicine is absolutely not all about the money. We love taking care of patients. We go into medicine because we want to help people. But again, I feel like many times people have that mindset that, oh, I should never consider the financial aspects of medicine. Or I should not consider things like my pay, like my salary. Or I shouldn't think of things like that. Let me tell you this, that mindset is what has brainwashed many people into degrading medicine as a profession. In fact, let me tell you this, that mindset literally degrades medicine as a profession in this country. Degrades medicine as a profession in this country. And the thing is, people in charge of residency programs and stuff, or administrators in charge of hospitals, they recognize that people have this mindset, so they use it to create certain excesses that then end up putting people in trouble, right? Or end up like, I don't know, like, I'm trying to be careful with my words here because, again, you don't know who's listening to this. But since people know that everyone, people going into medicine are all altruistic, they didn't start feeding like stupid things down their throats, and these people just accepted like, oh, let me be subjected to this punishment. Let me be subjected to these tough situations. I'm trying to prove my altruism. No, you got to be smart, right? At the end of the day, yes, don't get me wrong. You're pursuing medicine because it's your passion. But don't forget, you also have your family to provide for, right? Even the Bible says that a man that does not provide for his own household is worse than an infidel. Infidel comes from the word infidelity. It's almost like you are cheating on your wife if you don't provide for your family. Right? So the thing is, if you know your scores are not very competitive and you're like, oh, okay, I'm trying to get into orthopedic surgery. Well, tell yourself, okay, let me apply to like a sister specialty that may give me, it may, that, you know, has more relaxed requirements, that may give me some of those things I love, right? That may give me some of those things I love. The thing is, many times in life, it's perspective that controls what matters, right? Perspective is what matters. It's not the situation that you are thrust into that matters. Because again, situations change all the time. That thing that you really love about a specialty may disappear in like 2 or 3 years. And then you have to seek out new things. Again, perspective, contentment is what really matters with many of these things, right? So again, you need to be realistic. Say, for example, if you're trying to go into OB-GYN and you notice that your scores are really low, it makes perfect sense for you to apply to family medicine as a backup. Family medicine will give you quite a number of things you see in OB-GYN, especially depending on the setting you practice in, right? So again, you need to be realistic. You need to be realistic. And then mistake number 13 is not applying to enough programs at the outset and then adding others later. Again, I've talked about this already, but programs may think that you're adding them late because you've started running out of options and you're not getting interviews, right? So again, go all in from the beginning. Go all in from the beginning, right? Again, I know the process is expensive, but again, not matching and having to do the process all over again is very expensive. And think about it. Every cycle you spend not matching, you're literally letting yourself out of a couple $100,000 in terms of a physician's salary that you're literally missing out on. So again, it just makes sense. Go all in so that you can almost guarantee yourself that you'll match. And then the final mistake I'll talk about today are people that have prideful descriptions of themselves in personal statements and experience descriptions. Let me tell you this. People do not love arrogant personalities. I have seen this play out time and time and time again, right? You literally read the personal statement of some people, or you read the ERAS applications of some people, and it's almost like you're reading the statement of some influencer on social media that is trying to show you their prowess. Like, let me use an analogy. You don't want your app to be reduced to people thinking, wow, this person is just trying to show me how glorious they are, how amazing they are, how they are the best thing after sliced bread, how they're these people that, wow, it will be a privilege and an honor for them to be in our program. When they come into our program, we need to worship them every day. Let me tell you this. When you write an arrogant personal statement, or you describe yourself in your ERAS experiences in an arrogant fashion, let me tell you what you are presenting to residency programs. You are telling them that you're a proud person. You are telling them that you're a person that is not teachable. You're telling them that you're a person that is not humble. You're telling them that you're a person that is not going to be a good team player. You need to tone down. I'm not saying you should not sell yourself, but you can sell yourself with humility. You can sell yourself with humility. When you come across as a humble person, then you get, again, the thing is, a person that is humble is laying themselves low so that they can be lifted up. A person that is proud is setting themselves very high on a pedestal. When you're on a high pedestal, let me ask you this. What is like the natural direction for you to go? Down, right? So you need to be careful. You need to be careful. Do not be prideful in your ERAS application or in the way you describe yourself in your personal statement. So I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. As I do at the end of every podcast, again, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for all the USMLE exams. Step 1, Step 2 CK, Step 3, preclinical med school exams, third-year clerkship shelf exams. I tutor people for the complex exams, although I don't do OMM. But I tutor people pretty much for the complex exams. Complex exams. And then I have a YouTube channel, Divine Intervention USMLE Podcasts and Videos. That's where I post all the videos that I make. And then my website, obviously, divineinterventionpodcast.com. If you subscribe, then you get an email notification whenever I make a new podcast. And then I do also have another website, actually. It's because, you know, many of you have seen that I put some of these life lessons at the end of each podcast. So I've gotten tons of emails from people that, Divine, I really love your life lessons, right? So many of you listening to this podcast, you know I'm a Christian. So the thing is, I actually started a new website recently, a few months ago, actually. It's called divineinterventionlifelessons.com. In fact, I have about 23 episodes on it right now. They are all right around 10 minutes. And if you go there and subscribe again, you'll get an email notification whenever I make a new podcast. But also, I even have the podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's called the Divine Intervention Life Lessons Podcast. Right. Again, if you listen to them, again, they are like Bible-based teaching that should, you know, just addresses like a common problem that people face, along with like practical tips and strategies for dealing with those things. And then just the podcast for the website, I do have them on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, and on Spotify. So again, if you go on those podcast apps, you'll see the most recent 150 episodes. And I also help with ERAS applications and personal statements and stuff. I know it's kind of late in the process, but I do help people with that. So if you're interested in any of that, again, just shoot me an email through the website and I'll give you some more information. So thank you for listening to me today. I'll see you next time. God bless you. Thank you.